Chapter 2, The Second Principle. Behavior is my clue. When my daughter Molly was 4, I had a pivotal lesson in punishment. For whatever reason I can no longer remember, I sent her to her room. She stomped up the stairs and slammed the door. That was fine. I didn't expect her to be happy about it. Fortunately, I remained in the kitchen near the large picture window. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw movement and looked just in time to see Molly running off. She had climbed out her window, onto the roof of the porch, shimmied down the post, and took off. I finally found her hiding under a large bush beyond the barn. Many parents would have punished her for running off, but I took her behavior to mean that if I punished her, she would feel wronged and would pay me back as hard as she could. That's who she was. I decided right then and there that a retaliatory relationship was not what I wanted to have with her. I had to find a better way. She's never been punished since. It took me 4 years to learn the lesson, but when I looked at her behavior as my clue to what she needed instead of an indictment, our relationship changed. I've never regretted letting go of punishment. The meaning of behavior. Your child's behavior is your indicator of his well-being. The behavior is your clue, your signal to the internal emotional state that lies beneath the behavior and triggers it. Even the awful, annoying, embarrassing, exhausting behavior. It's what tells you how your child is doing. Be grateful for it. It's all you have to let you know what your child needs. What she doesn't have is words and an understanding of what's going on. It's all there in her behavior. You just have to put your detective hat on to uncover the cause. Adults are quite capable of keeping their internal emotions under wraps, but children are raw. They don't know yet how to keep a lid on it. What specifically is generating the behavior may not be apparent. It's not always necessary to know. What is necessary, what makes all the difference in how we handle the behavior, is the perception that the behavior you see is rooted in something real, a deeper emotional state. If the behavior is developmentally and temperamentally appropriate, you can rest assured your child's doing fine. When, at age 3 or 4, she's climbed onto the counter to get the flour she's seen you use and makes a cake with it all over the kitchen floor, her behavior is plenty annoying, but age-appropriate. She's doing fine. If your morning dawdler holds back, resists getting dressed, and is hard to remove from television, his temperament may be telling you that he's a slow mover and has a difficult time with transitions. He's also fine. But if the behavior is inappropriate, out of control, and unusual to your child's temperament and stage of development, then it's telling you that your child is out of balance, in turmoil, and has a need that's not being met. Your child is not a happy camper. So when that resistant, defiant behavior shows up, and you understand that this behavior is your clue that your child is hurting, and you know that he wants to be successful, your perception will automatically change from "my child is being a problem" to "my child is having a problem." You will understand that there is an obstacle in your child's way of success. Taking behavior at face value. Typically, we look at behavior at face value only. Our primary concern is that the child does what we want. If she's too noisy, a bother, asks too many questions, and whines and tantrums to get what she wants, we tell her, "Be quiet, don't bother me, and stop whining." Depending on the degree of our annoyance, we may coerce, threaten, yell, hit, reprimand, or isolate her to get what we want. She will feel misunderstood, angry, accused, bad, and will have no recourse but to take whatever punishment is doled out. Depending on her temperament, she will either act out these feelings with more misbehavior, repress her feelings, and learn she's wrong to have them, or seek revenge by tormenting a sibling, friend, or pet, thereby signaling her problem again. Webster defines behavior as the aggregate of responses to internal stimuli and external stimuli. In other words, behavior is the expression of how a child feels on the inside when faced with what is coming at him from the outside, whether it be a parent, sibling, teacher, friend, or event. That external condition reacts with internal emotions and results in behavior. The behavior can tell us what's going on if we pay attention. We must be a detective and use the clues of the behavior to get to the need. To affect our children's behavior, his internal state must first be understood, then accepted, and then addressed. Looking for the roots. Think of behavior metaphorically. Your child's misbehavior is like weeds in a garden. If you don't like the way the weeds look, you can yank them away so they can't be seen. But as any gardener knows, a quick removal means reappearance in a day or two. If you take the time to get down and dirty and dig out the roots, the weeds will be gone. Punishing behavior is like grabbing at the weeds. It's a temporary fix. But by digging to the roots of the behavior, addressing the emotional state and underlying need, the behavior itself will disappear. The expressing behavior may result from a present situation, a tantrum over being told no, or it can represent a cumulative effect that seems a mystery. Where did that come from? All I said was, it's time to get your coat on, and he acted like I told him to jump out the window. Cumulative effects build up and root deeply, often requiring additional outside detective work from a professional. If the balance of power is off, for example, and the child feels powerless too often, the autocratic model, that growing sense of powerlessness can erupt over being told to put a coat on. You may think he's unreasonable or overly sensitive. Possibly you yell or punish. A power struggle ensues. To address the internal cause requires more than just forgetting about the coat. It needs an evaluation of power in the family. Question what the person or circumstance, the external stimuli, is asking or expecting of the child. Is the external condition adding too much pressure, setting unrealistic expectations, presenting too much stimulation, or being disrespectful? Lauren had been attempting to get her very outspoken and determined 3.5-year-old Caroline away from her playdate and home so she could have dinner ready on time for once. The evening, bedtime, and Caroline's behavior the next day depended on an early, smooth dinner time. Lauren had exhausted all her tricks, such as 5-minute, 3-minute, and 1-minute warnings, and, "Tucker will be so hungry if you don't get home to feed him." Embarrassed in front of the friend's mother, Lauren thought her daughter was rude and disobedient, so she pulled out the empty threat trick she hated. "If you don't come right now, you won't be able to come back here again." She knew she wouldn't carry through with it, but it worked, so she kept using it. Caroline started to climb in the car when she saw her Barbie doll lying on the back seat. She shrieked gleefully, "Oh, I forgot! I have to show Annie my Barbie!" She grabbed the doll and started to run back. Lauren grabbed Caroline's arm and shouted right in her face, "No, you will not! You have taken way too long to leave, and now you're coming with me!" Caroline hit her mother on the arm with her Barbie doll. Lauren grabbed Barbie out of Caroline's hand, yelled at her, and shoved her into her car seat. Fuming, Lauren drove with a tightly clenched jaw, listening to Caroline screaming all the way home. The rest of the evening was a nightmare as Caroline refused to eat, angrily resisted everything Lauren asked her to do, and didn't get to sleep until 9:30. Exhausted, angry, and feeling like a failure, Lauren fell into bed dreading the next morning. This kind of situation is not fair to either Lauren or Caroline. Look at what the behaviors are signaling regarding Caroline's internal state. Caroline didn't want to stop having fun at her friend's house. Age-appropriate internal stress over having to leave. And when she was confronted by the threat of not coming again, external condition, she felt trapped, increased internal stress. Finding her Barbie brought excitement again, but her angry mother grabbed her arm, external condition suddenly increasing the stress, and she reacted impulsively, age-appropriate release of tension, by hitting her mother, her expressed behavior. She was immediately yelled at and forced into the car. Her only option was to defend herself, and at 3 she had few coping skills to do much more than scream to release her tension, expressed behavior. Her need was to be accepted for her desires and to have her agenda, showing the Barbie doll, at least acknowledged, if not allowed. But Lauren was feeling her own frustration and was too focused on her agenda of getting home to be able to acknowledge Caroline's. Lauren expected Caroline to climb aboard her agenda and relinquish her own. Parent as detective. By viewing Caroline's behavior as a clue that has roots to something deeper, let's see how things could be different. If Lauren were detecting roots, even with little patience left, She would see that Caroline was frustrated and upset, rather than rude and disobedient, allowing Lauren to have a bit more compassion. Understanding Caroline's persistent temperament and developmental lack of impulse control, Lauren could put the clues together to come up with a better way to manage her daughter's behavior. First, Lauren and Caroline need a plan for leaving a playdate. They can work it out ahead of time, so when it comes time to leave and Caroline doesn't remember the plan, Lauren can calmly say, "Let's follow our agreement. Do you want to walk yourself, or shall I carry you to the car?" If Lauren knows that Caroline wants to be successful, she will understand that something is in her way of cooperating. In this case, her impulsivity, stage of development, and persistence, temperament, not disobedience or manipulation. Caroline's behavior would still be frustrating, but would not feel so much like an attack. When Caroline resists leaving, persistent temperament, Lauren would say, "Of course you don't want to go. You're having so much fun," giving her validation. "What's the first thing you'll tell Tucker about when we get home?" If this doesn't motivate Caroline, Lauren would give her the choice of going herself or being carried to the car, even if it causes tears. When Caroline sees Barbie in the back seat, Lauren could either decide this is a battle not worth fighting, thereby relinquishing a few minutes rather than the whole evening, or acknowledge Caroline's agenda and balance it with her own. "Oh, Caroline, I wish I could take the time to let you run back with Barbie. I just don't have any more time today." As Caroline cries, Lauren can give her a hug and acknowledge how much she wants to show Barbie and how sad she must feel. "I bet Barbie would like to meet your friend, too. Let's make sure that next time we come, Barbie comes, too. What would you like her to wear when she comes?" There's no guarantee of a cheerful ride home, but it's likely that Caroline's internal state will be more sad than angry, so the screaming may be less intense, would eventually subside, and the rest of the evening could go smoothly. The problem came for Caroline when her mother did not acknowledge her agenda, but expected her to go along with what her mother wanted. When our children are acting out, they're trying to tell us something. If Caroline had the words and the maturity, she could have told her mother that she wasn't intending to make her late, nor was she intending to be inconsiderate or disobedient when she saw her doll and wanted to show it to her friend. She was just wanting to stay. When she hit her mother with the doll, her behavior meant, "Hey, you're treating me like I'm a bad kid. You're yelling at me and grabbing me, and I don't like it. I'm mad at you." Even then, if Lauren could have detached enough, after expressing her anger about being hit, to see the behavior as a clue, the weeds, she could have prevented the rest of the day from going downhill by acknowledging Caroline's anger, one of the roots. "You must be really mad at me to hit me like that. You're mad because I won't let you take Barbie back in," addressing the internal state. "I can understand that. You may not hit me, but you can tell me how mad you are." Caroline's anger must be allowed so she does not learn that she's wrong for feeling angry. It's the hit that's not okay. If the root of the hit is addressed, then the hit needn't happen again. If Lauren is not able to detach, she can play detective after her emotions calm and come back to the situation later to address Caroline's internal state. "Remember when we both had a very bad time leaving Annie's house? I didn't like how either of us behaved, and I'd like to do a do-over." Lauren can acknowledge Caroline's frustration and anger as well as her own at not being able to leave when she wanted and then being hit. When emotions are calm and the situation is behind them, Caroline is more likely to spontaneously apologize. Demanding an apology never works. For hitting her mother, thereby making amends that will help her internal state of balance. They can talk about how they would each handle the situation differently, making a plan for next time. Problem-solving made simple. Lauren would have the opportunity to model owning up to a mistake, apologizing, and holding Caroline accountable for her part. Understanding misbehavior, seeing the obstacle. If we accept the principle that children want to be successful, then it holds true that children don't intend misbehavior. In other words, children never misbehave for the sake of misbehaving, but only as an expression of stress. In their book, Beyond Consequences, Logic and Control, Heather T. Forbes and B. Brian Post say, quote, All negative behavior arises from an unconscious, fear-based state of stress. End quote. In this light, misbehavior is viewed as a sudden impulse or mistake, not as an attack, intentional manipulation, or failure. When behavior becomes manipulative, it is through learning its power of grabbing attention, albeit negative. When misbehavior is continually misunderstood, a pattern of failure sets in, and the out-of-balance, unsuccessful child spends a good deal of time in fight or defense mode. His fragile sense of self tries to fight off what doesn't feel right when his basic needs are not being met. He doesn't understand it, so he acts out with a behavior to signal his parents that he needs help. Understood this way, punishing misbehavior adds insult to injury and makes no sense. With the understanding that my child wants to be successful, misbehavior is viewed as a defensive reaction to meeting an obstacle. In other words, when I see misbehavior, I will think, my child is having a problem because something is blocking him from being successful. My perception has switched 180 degrees from my previous one, that he's doing it on purpose, that he's being a problem. My emotion changes from anger to compassion. I know he wants to be successful on the other side of the obstacle, so I can be more objective, less reactive in handling the behavior. The reward and punishment system actually sets up misbehavior by creating obstacles. Its fundamental premise holds that children are basically unruly and uncooperative unless trained to behave properly. Rewards and punishments act counter to trust. Coercive methods are believed necessary to keep the unruly from getting out of control. Parents believe they're teaching responsibility, but they are demanding obedience to an external authority. The punitive system demands that children do as parents say, no matter what. When children resist those demands and turn parent deaf, parents feel distraught and often lash out in anger, increasing the child's obstacles. The result is parents who feel like failures and children who resist authority, ignore their own instincts, and do not know how to develop the internal controls that promote responsible behavior. Hearing instead of reacting. Let's say that an 11-year-old named Lisa, in a sudden outburst, has just screamed at her father, "You just don't get it, do you? You're so lame. What century do you live in, anyway?" He perhaps said something innocuous, like, "You're not wearing that, are you?" If her father decides to send her to her room for her rude, disrespectful behavior, he's pulling at the weeds and missing the roots of her behavior. Lisa will likely be left fuming. She will feel resentful and misunderstood, and her anger will continue to build, waiting for its next release. Connection between the two of them has been ruptured, and communication will be very difficult. The cause of her outburst, the root of her behavior, is unattended, and her father will likely assume that she's being a bratty pre-adolescent who must be taught her place. The seeds of future teenage rebellion are planted. It's hard for a parent to hear retributions such as Lisa's and not take it personally. Reacting to the face value of this type of behavior is common and understandable. This is unacceptable behavior. Our culture tells us it must be punished. Many parents would think that taking time to understand where Lisa's coming from, hearing what she's trying to say to her father, is indulgent, permissive, and condones disrespectful behavior. However, seeing Lisa's words and tone as his clue to her internal emotional state is exactly what's needed to build a bridge across a gap that is in present danger of widening. It's likely that her words hurt her father. Understandable. He may need some time to regain his balance and think about his next move before addressing the situation with her. Taking this needed time and walking away to prevent his emotional reaction does not mean he's letting her get away with it. He needs as long as it takes to approach her again and be able to respond with calmness and authority. If their relationship is generally good and Lisa is reacting with an attitude she's picked up, he's better off to make light of it, answering something like, "Let me check with my calendar. I believe it's the 21st century. Clearly we disagree about your wardrobe. Clearly you're dressing the way you see fit. But your dear old dad is having a heart attack. Is there any way to help him out here?" He could add, And by the way, I didn't appreciate the characterization of lameness. Would you please tell me again that you didn't like my comment in a more respectful way? However, if their relationship has been disconnected, chances are Lisa is reacting to many internal roots. If her father wants to mend some fences, he needs to take what she says to heart before asking for a change of attitude. Lisa, what you said to me last night about being lame, I've been thinking about it. Forget it, Dad. Yeah, but it didn't come out of nowhere. I want to know what it is I'm not getting and why you feel so angry with me. I guess I haven't been paying much attention lately to what's going on with you. Even if he initially yelled and sent her to her room, these could be some of the most powerful words Lisa's father could say to her. They respect her integrity, her need for his attention, and they let her know that her feelings and opinions are important to him. He's built a bridge across the gap and given Lisa a safe way to approach him with her concerns and complaints. Whether she does or not is the risk he must be willing to take. He may be laying himself open to a barrage of criticisms and angry remarks. Most parents are not willing to make themselves vulnerable to this kind of risk. But if his words are said with genuine concern and compassion, he could have a fruitful discussion and learn some things about his daughter. If dismissal and punishment has been his game for a long time, a risk like this could be the most healing thing he could do. Likely it would take a good deal more than saying a few words to regain trust with his daughter, but it would be a great start. Lisa may also dismiss him with, "Dad, get over it, it's no big deal." But his attempt at connection will still land with her. Once connection has been made, he may want to add that he does not appreciate being called names with such attitude and hopes that from now on she can say something more respectful, even if it's a complaint. This will depend on how well the roots have been attended. If her need for power, respect, or acceptance has been addressed, calling her on her behavior is probably unnecessary. The cumulative effect of a self-involved parent attending only to his own agenda can result in sending unintentional messages to his child that she's a nuisance, an inconvenience, invisible, even worthless. These messages remain in her internal emotional state and become the roots for future behavior, decisions, and choices. When connections allow opinions to be expressed between parent and child, there's no added baggage for the child to carry about invisibility or lack of importance. Parents often need to swallow their pride, sometimes lose face, and pay attention to the messages they may be sending with their reactions. Coming down off a righteous pedestal to apologize, to say, "I see it differently now and I wish I hadn't said what I did," is not being inconsistent and wishy-washy. On the contrary, it's the powerful thing to do. Think what those words would feel like coming from your parent even 30 or 40 years after the fact. When behavior gets dramatic, if we do not pay attention, play detective, and get to the roots of our children's misbehavior, they have no choice but to get louder and more dramatic with their behavior. In The Body Never Lies, The Lingering Effects of Hurtful Parenting, Swiss psychologist Alice Miller says, quote, "The original negative emotion is an important signal emitted by the body. If that message is ignored, the body has to emit new signals in an attempt to make itself heard," end quote. You may suddenly see hitting where there was none before, or hear swearing or dramatic language like, "You're stupid," or "You hate me," or "I wish I was dead." It will be whatever the child thinks will get your attention. 9-year-old Brian started coming up with an attitude and tough words whenever his father asked him to do something he didn't want to. This behavior always got his father's negative attention. Tom was sure his son was tormenting him on purpose, so of course he wanted to stop him. When I suggested that he think of Brian's attitude as his clue to a deeper need, Tom was dubious. Through talking it out, it became apparent that Brian wanted more of his father, who worked long hours, was often away on business, and usually hid behind a newspaper when he was home. Whenever they did an activity together, Brian was a happy boy. I suggested that whenever Tom heard the attitude or dramatic words, to go to his son and give him some positive attention. "Isn't that rewarding bad behavior?" Tom asked. "I'd be giving him positive attention for negative behavior." It felt counterintuitive to Tom, whose logic told him to punish. "That's if you see the attitude as what you are giving attention to," I said. "But in fact, when you have detected his need for connection with you, it's the need you're giving attention to. You're simply using the attitude as your clue. Put the clue aside, at least temporarily, and attend to the roots." Indeed, Brian responded remarkably well to his father's experiment. The attitude has lessened, but when it emerges, Tom sees it as his kick in the pants. The basic needs of a child. Respect. To be respected as much as any other member of the family. Power. To have a sense of personal power and capability to make something happen. Acceptance. To be fully and unconditionally accepted for the person he is. Trust. To be trusted and have the opportunity to trust others. Belonging. To feel like an important, cared-about member of the family. Structure. To be given strong and consistent guidelines in order to know what to expect and what is expected of him. Boundaries. To have healthy boundaries in order to know the difference between the child's and the parent's responsibilities. Modeling. To have positive, caring models. Translating childology. Sometimes young children say things they don't mean because they don't understand the definition of words the way we do. It's important to address the root because you may be taking your child literally when she's trying to tell you something completely different. Sharon complained about her 4-year-old daughter Erica, who claimed her mother was calling her stupid, when in fact she wasn't at all. Later, Erica said, "You think I'm stupid." And still later, "I'm stupid." Sharon talked at length in our parenting group about how Erica got on her nerves and infuriated her, how much they butted heads, and how regretful she was about some of the things she'd said to her. But she had never called her stupid. She thought quite the opposite, actually. Sharon answered Erica with, "You are not stupid. I never said that. I think you're very smart." Since the incidents were still happening, it seemed clear that Sharon's response was not addressing what Erica was trying to tell her. I suggested that she ask Erica what the word stupid means to her the next time she heard it. Sure enough, when she asked Erica what stupid meant, she said, "When someone's angry at you, that means they think you're stupid." Her definition is not at all the opposite of smart. Her definition is bad. Someone who's yelled at a lot is stupid. Think about it. If you're a young child and the most important person in your life is angry with you a fair amount of the time, wouldn't you think you were stupid or something was wrong with you? Erica may feel stupid for not knowing what to do to prevent her mother's anger. Children don't question the adults in their life. They question themselves. They take in messages about themselves from what we say and do and either adapt, taking responsibility for our words and actions, or resist and rebel. When our buttons get pushed, we react. Our perfectly good intentions go down the drain, and the message received by our child is often far from what we intended. Sharon's angry reactions to her strong-willed child were intended to get her daughter to give her a moment's peace, but the message received was, "I'm stupid." Many of the words and phrases of young children require translation to understand their meaning in order to get at the roots. When we react in anger and accusation, children quickly learn how to get our attention and push our buttons. Relatively innocuous words can turn into powerful weapons. We may not like what they say, but when we can reflect back their meaning, rather than react to the face value, they eventually learn to say what they mean because they trust we're listening. The following is a chart with examples of a few dramatic words that children have learned will get a rise, together with a more appropriate way to respond. Words we hear. "I hate you." Meaning, "I'm really, really mad at you." Effective response, "You're really, really mad at me." The words we hear. "You love him more." Meaning, "It's not fair." Effective response, "It doesn't seem fair to you that he got to dot, dot, dot." Words we hear. "You're not my mommy." Meaning, "This isn't what I expect from you." Effective response, You wish I would say something different. Words we hear. You're mean. Meaning, I don't like what you just said or did. Effective response. You don't like it when I... dot, dot, dot. Words we hear. You don't love me. Meaning, you're not being fair. I can't get you to pay attention to me. Effective response. It doesn't feel fair to you that I'm spending so much time with the baby. Words we hear. You can't make me. Meaning, you're taking my power away. Effective response. You wish you could do it the way you want. Words we hear. You're stupid. Meaning, you don't understand me. Effective response. I wonder if you think I'm not hearing you. The words we hear. I don't care, so what? Or laughing. Meaning, I'm protecting myself from you. Effective response. You must think I'm nagging or being unfair. The words we hear. I'm going to kill myself. I wish I were dead. Meaning, it feels like nobody cares. Effective response. You must be feeling really hopeless. Note, a statement like, I'm going to kill myself, or I wish I were dead, should not be taken lightly, but often it's used for dramatic effect. An effective response is absolutely necessary to engage your child in a conversation so you can find out how serious the meaning is. Self-protective behaviors. When children feel blamed or worry they're going to get in trouble or disappoint us, they have no option other than to defend and protect themselves. They run off, cover their ears, laugh, lie, blame someone else, anything to not get in trouble. Lying is a child's defense mechanism that says, I can't tell you the truth because you'll be mad. Author Art Smith says in his Dad's Survival Manual, Dad's Work, quote, children learn to lie when they think they're responsible for how you feel, so they may say things that will keep you from getting upset, from worrying, from getting angry, from hitting them, from being disappointed in them, end quote. The word lie needs never be uttered, especially with a child under 6. They're not lying by adult definition, but covering up, not telling the whole story, or creating a fantasy. When a child expects to be blamed, I didn't do it, seems the most expedient way to avoid the problem. When we label children, they learn to identify themselves with the label. Instead of, you're lying, try, that doesn't sound like the truth to me. You probably don't want me to know what happened if you're afraid I'll be mad. Maybe just start with one part and I promise to listen. I know that you want to tell me the truth. Would it help to tell someone else first? Additional obstacles. Often our children's obstacles are out of our control and require more than parent detective work. Many require professional consulting or diagnosing from herbalists to psychiatrists. Hormonal and other chemical imbalances can be the cause of continued explosive episodes, severe behaviors, and depression or serious lethargy. Poor nutrition can affect the child's level of activity or attentiveness. Brain wiring strongly affects learning processes. Temperamentally shy children can experience a great deal more anxiety than the more outgoing child. The list goes on. Stress factors always exacerbate any feature, genetic or otherwise, so regardless of the origin of the child's obstacle, the quality of your interaction means a great deal. Main ideas from Chapter 2. Behavior is your clue to your child's internal emotional state. Misbehavior is a red flag. Children don't misbehave on purpose, but because something is preventing them from getting it right. There's always a reason, a trigger beneath inappropriate behavior. Misbehavior is like weeds in a garden. Ignoring its roots means the behavior will return. Punishing misbehavior only creates more conflict and stress for the child to fight against, requiring more punishment, a never-ending cycle. Punishments are external controls that deter the development of internal controls of right and wrong. When children feel unheard, words or behavior become loud and dramatic. Children's words often need interpretation to understand the meaning and not react to their face value. Practice. Hold the thought My child wants to be successful, so something must be in his way. What can that be, and how can I help? Remember, you will need to feel understanding or compassion, not anger, in order to help. Whenever your child is behaving in a way you don't like, ask yourself where this behavior is coming from, what is it trying to say, and what are its roots. When your child does something inappropriate, name the behavior with a line beneath to represent the surface of the ground. Draw lines going down into the soil to represent roots. Then write something on each root that could be a cause of the behavior. You could also make a chart called Interpreting Behavior. The child's behavior: he threw his toy across the room and it broke. Child's emotions: anger, frustration. The root: he was mad that I told him to put his toys away. He didn't like my angry tone and was telling me that he wasn't being bad, he just wanted to keep playing. The child's behavior: she didn't do her homework and had to stay in for recess. Then she acted like it was all my fault. Child's emotions: she probably felt furious at the school and mad at me for getting angry with her. The root: she feels dumb and no one can help her find her way of working. Check it out with your child. After the incident, tell your child you were thinking about what happened and wanted to find out if what you thought she meant was right.